From Knockadoole to Ardmore, so much to do and see. Mike Brooks, you were with us last week, and indeed we were talking about the loss of the SSRA there. This week, as we said, we're going submersible. We're heading down into the deep blue.
We are.
Now, again, I suppose looking at the bay and looking out the harbour here, you know, it's sometimes in a fine day, it is very surreal. And we look out at Mona Train, we look out towards Easter Point, and we look out, or should I say, Eastern Point.
Eastern.
To get it right.
Yeah.
And look out to, we say, Capel Island, etc., etc. And we see a sanguine sea. We don't know what's underneath it.
Absolutely, yeah.
But Mike Brooks does.
I've a fair idea. I don't know
you
all of it.
You have a fair idea.
Because
again, as I say, there's so much down there.
Well, there is. And kind of, I suppose, for myself as well, because I do a bit of diving, you know what
yes.
I mean? And I suppose back in, you know, 20 years ago, I was doing a hell of a lot more. But it's I have all the diving gear still. I still, you know, every year at least get a bit wet. But I must get back into it again. You know, myself, even, I suppose, over COVID times, we all kind of got a bit lazy. But I bought all new gear as well.
Oh, you know, brilliant.
Because, you know, unfortunately, there was a few accidents happening. It makes your mind wonder, is my gear okay? You know, am I
yeah,
going to be?
Course.
So we'll see. And I have, I'm lucky enough, I have my own compressor as well for air and all that as
yeah,
well.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's good. It's
Mike, I suppose before we go into that, we say there's so many wrecks and there's so much, we say, lost equipment down
yep.
there. Right. The contours of the seabed itself. Like, okay, we look out from the lighthouse, we'd say, and we look across there when the tide is very low.
Yeah.
And you'd say, I could nearly swim across that. And you go out so far, and next minute, there's a little bit of a drop. And it starts dropping down then.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And it, like what's out there? As regards, we said, the contours, the geological formation of
well,
it
kind of depends, really. We'll say, if you're, it depends where you are, obviously, enough, you know, the way, basically. So, look, I always say, anywhere kind of from Ferry Point out to, you know, past the lighthouse, it's very, very sandy. It really, the bottom is kind of very sandy there.
Yes.
One of the things, actually, funny enough, for I suppose everybody listening, you know the way when the tide is in and y'all is beautiful, and when the tide goes out, you can see the mud and all that. But just beyond, when the tide is fully out and you're looking down, but just beyond that mud, it's kind of the easy way to say it is like Yall Harbour is like a riverbed, you know the way. So it's it's not all you think it's the same mud outside,
it's the same, but it's not.
But it's not. It's a solid, really a solid ground.
Oh, is it?
And
is there a trench?
Well, there's a channel as you're coming in,
yeah.
Especially behind, we'll say where the lifeboat station is there.
Yes.
And we were saying this at the time as well. It's basically with the tractor and trailer, you know, we had with the lifeboat, we'll say it's the lifeboat is on the trailer and the tractor goes out. But if it's very, very low tide, it's very hard to actually sometimes launch even or recover, especially the lifeboat, because you drive out and all of a sudden you see the whole trailer just going zoop straight into the, you know, the way
into
down.
The mud.
It's not even mud. It's just going down the side of a cliff, basically.
What is it?
Because it's a little channel. I know it's not huge, but if you see the shipping and all the boats, they all come in fairly close because they're following in along the channel as well.
Yes,
anyway.
Yes.
But
yes.
Like, you know, and it's Yall Harbour is lovely. It really, really is a great dive because there's so much down there as well. Like, you know, because we do a lot with moorings for friends as well, because you'll see the mooring buoys.
Yes, yes.
And then what it is, the buoy is in the top. There's a chain, normally a rope, going down to a block, and the block then we used to make them up ourselves, you know, get a like a tractor tire, the front tire of a tractor tire,
fill it with concrete,
fill it with
put
concrete.
A ring in it or something like that,
put a bit of chain into it, pour the concrete into it, leave it set.
That's your anchor,
and that's your anchor,
and
basically.
Of course it beds down into the sea then,
and it does, and it's, but again it's not mud, you know,
it beds down into the ground,
so it's kind of like solid. And I always say Yall Harbour, it's a lovely dive anyway, because
it's not solid rock, it's kind of shale.
It's
shaley.
It's like a riverbed, to be honest with you.
Yes.
Because if you think of it, like the River Blackwater is, it's part of the River Blackwater. And in, like I keep saying, it's great because it's clean, because it's like a toilet, it flushes twice, you know, the tide comes in, tide comes out. But also the river is cleaning the harbour as well.
Yes.
So actually inside the harbour, it, you know, might look, you know, muddy and all that, but actually it's very, very clean inside there as well. Stony and rocky, but one of the good things, we'll say the inner harbour bit, Noel, there's loads of stuff down there, because if you remember we were talking about the boats, Yall was probably the second most important, we'll say, especially in the south of Ireland, Yall was the most important harbour.
Yes.
Going back to 1700s, we'll say, especially. So all these guys, you know, their rubbish at the time was being thrown overboard, and there was boats everywhere. So it was like, you know, we've every time you go down there, you'll find something.
Correct.
Like it could be like a 100-year-old bottle, a lot of
cannonball or something like that.
Well, you'd like to catch a cannonball, but they'd be fairly rusted, I'd say.
Yeah.
But anything like clay pipes, especially, we got loads of clay pipes.
Because you think now that, look, you know, you look out there and you say the bottom of the river is as clean as that. There's nothing down there.
Yeah, there was loads.
But there is loads down there. But it is a virtual rubbish tip, I suppose, for anybody.
It would be.
Clay pipes, that's amazing.
But an interesting one, because, like, and it is, because, and funnily enough, a load of ship wheels, you know, on the, we'll say where the ropes went in, there was the little... The pulley system,
blocks.
But it was
the blocks.
Absolutely, and a lot of the wheels that were inside in the block. You know, these were made out of wood at the time, and then the rope used to go in and used to pull up, you know, all the sails and all that kind
of
stuff.
Yeah.
So obviously they used to be changing the wheels inside. We'll say the pulley itself inside.
Or they'd wear down, or they'd break down over the side.
Probably take it out and throw it over the side, and there it was.
Amazing.
So you get a load of it. I should have brought a few men actually. To be honest, just to have a look at it.
Yeah.
Again, like, you know, the way there's a load of guys with different things, and again we're keep going on about the museum. If we can get a museum, fantastic place. Everybody would just donate, like I'd donate anything that I had to it as well.
Yes, of course.
But yeah, you get loads of stuff down there, and even kind of modern day stuff, lots of brick, funnily enough, as well, from the red brick. So I suppose when they were loading on probably bricks or something like that, if any of them broke, they just threw them overboard. And then they used to go over, we'll say the ships used to go over to across the Monatree, and that was called Dutchman's Ballast, because if they came in with a cargo, you had to have ballast, because
we should
be flopping all over the place.
Yes.
So ballast is just a weight.
Rocks, weight.
Basically.
Heavy, acting heavy.
And you could see that there was piles of rock as well. So some ships maybe came in with ballast. So every so often you see kind of a pile of rocks just in one little area. So as they were coming in, they say, right, stop here, let's get rid of the ballast, and then they'll put their cargo on as well. So you get a lot of ballast inside in the harbour as well. So a lot of rock around the place as well. But yeah, there's, and then
amazing.
The moorings as well are, you know, it's interesting to see old moorings as well that are gone, you know, the way. So
yes.
The old blocks and the old anchors and all that kind of good stuff is down there.
So it's like a time machine down there, so isn't it, really?
It is.
You know, when you think
and,
of it.
And nobody's you know the way, it's great, because, you know, nobody, and it was a funny one, but like, when, I suppose for people, you know, it's always like kind of Irish waters is extreme diving, because the simple fact, cold and bad visibility is generally, you know, the way, if you think about all these, you know, lovely programmes in Turkey and the Red Sea
crystal
and all
clear
that.
Crystal water, clear. And of course the temperature up around 24,
absolutely,
25 degrees.
Absolutely.
Like. Yeah.
And this is kind of just, you know, the way you're taught how to dive there. It's a total different story then.
And the current would be fairly strong.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And you,
especially
you see,
the tides in and out.
Well, your harbour, you have to, you know, we do, if we're going checking moorings, you cannot, it's impossible to do mid tide, you know the way. So if the tide is coming in,
there is a rush of water to be
tide.
There's
a rush.
Yeah.
So what you have to do, you've kind of, and fully enough, you don't have much time, Noel, to be honest with you. So you have a kind of like a 20 minute before, 20 minute after high tide, low tide. So
yes.
I always like to, I personally prefer the high tide. So searching for high tide if we're doing moorings or something like that, because it's slower.
Yes.
Low tide. I'd be working at maybe a mooring or something like that in low tide, and it's very easy, because again, I suppose for everybody coming in, if you're coming in the harbour, you're looking at Yall Bridge, you're heading north. If you're coming out of the harbour, you're heading south. Cape Island is south of us. I suppose Monatree over to England east, and then obviously, you know, the town walls is the west of us. But it's especially in the low tide, we'll say, all of a sudden, it's very easy to tell you which direction, because, you know, if you know where the tide is coming in, if the tide is coming in, you're heading north, you know the way, or you're kind of heading, so that at that stage you're going up north. It's, you know the way, it's instead of using compasses, we just use the tidal track then.
Yeah, you'd have
exactly
an idea when the tide is dormant, and next minute you feel the tide is changing.
And I'll be heading south now in a few minutes' time as well, anyway. But there's loads of stuff, you know the way.
That's
really
amazing.
It really is. And I, because I dive now, you know, I suppose for diving, there's different, you know, there's different categories of diving. Now we'd be the lowest because we'd be the recreational diver, and yes, we'll say the recreational divers. You know, I dived an awful lot with John Goggin here, just
John, yeah, yeah,
Mary Street there as well. In the lifeboat, we'd Karen Welsh. She's brilliant, actually, very good. Jason Ansborough does a lot of the Navy stuff as well. Mm. Jason is fantastic. There's some fantastic divers around the place. You know, they're really, really good. We've technical divers as well, just for yourself as yep. well, just Gavin Tyvey, Pat Wade. Gavin and Pat actually found a U-boat. It's a U-1276-1276 at 75 metres. So the recreational diving, our kind of limit is 45 metres.
Yeah.
And then the recreational diver, the technical divers, then they'll be doing mixed gas and different things so they can go down deeper. But I just, you know, something I wouldn't.
So that's so we're getting into the technical side of it, I suppose. And again, that's one thing I suppose I wanted to touch on in the programme as regards what, you know, technical ability, the equipment you use, and indeed oxygen. As I say, you'll be in the, we'd say, on one side of the spectrum. Whereas the likes of Phil Tyvey would be slightly different, and there'd be Gavin, different, yeah, yeah, different mixtures for different
absolutely,
levels.
Absolutely. Yeah. Like we'd be like mostly, most divers, recreation divers, will dive what's called just normally air. So it's like normally 20% oxygen, 80% nitrogen.
Yes.
It's the easy way to say it.
Yes.
Nitrogen is what's called inert gas.
The inert gas, yeah.
It's the one that gives you the bends as well, unfortunately. Mm. So that's what they try to do is mixed gas kind of, and I used to do nitrox as well, so myself and John Goggin would be nitrox trained as well up. And nitrox is still oxygen and nitrogen, but it's a different level. So we'll say if we were going a little deeper, we could do, I used to dive an awful lot with 28% or
yeah,
30%.
The percentage would be different.
Absolutely.
Yeah, depending on the, on how deep you go.
On to how deep you're going as well. And then the technical guys, then they'd be mixing, we'll say, they're doing mixed gases, so they try to get rid of the nitrogen out of it because, as I said, that's the bit that gives
you the
bends.
Yeah, yeah.
And when you're coming up as well, because as you get deeper, an easy way to say it, I suppose, is you know, people say
the blood bubbles or boils, doesn't it?
It's not. Yeah, it's just you know, we were saying about that. It was you know, when you're coming up, you have to breathe out and never pass your bubbles. Basically, that's what they said.
Yeah.
And that's the easy way for us to remember it as well.
Take your time coming up, apparently. So you take your time. Yeah. Yeah,
and
yeah,
really, what happens then, Noel, is the easy way to say it is sitting here now, you know, you hear in the news and the weather forecast, one bar pressure, you know, millibars.
Of course, yeah, yeah.
And how many millibars. Yeah. And it's, I suppose, the easy way to say it, and people won't believe this actually, the easy way to say it is if you can get a pipe, just any pipe at all, and go straight up until nearly the atmosphere, there's a weight, you know, there's a weight on the air that's inside in that pipe, there's a weight, and it's called one bar pressure. Now, if you wanted to get 2 bar pressure, if you got a pipe 10 metres, the exact same pipe, and put it 10 metres high and filled it with water, so that's 10 metres of water, that's then the same as the other pipe there as well, that's 2 bar, that'll be 2 bar pressure. So when you go 10 metres underneath the water, you're at 2 bar. So at ground level here, you're at 1 bar, 10 metres 2 bar, 20 metres 3 bar, you know, it keeps going up as well. And the easy way to say it then as well is, if I get a balloon and fill it up, and if I go 10 metres underneath the water, the balloon will shrink, you know, the exactly half. It'll be 50% the size as, and if you bring it back up,
it's exactly the opposite. If it goes into the atmosphere, it's later, it'll burst.
It's, that's right.
Like the weather balloons.
Things. Mm. But, and so that's what people ask, you know, oh, how long does, you know, your air last? Well, it depends how long, how deep I am.
How,
you know,
deep
the way
you go, yeah.
And
yeah,
so really, and bottle of, like, if a bottle of air, if I had it on my back and I'm here sitting with Noel here and it lasts an hour, if I go 10 metres underneath the water, it's going to last exactly a half an hour. So it's half, because what you have to do is suck in, and you don't feel, you know, it's no major things. It's just like breathing, but what you're doing is you're breathing in twice as much. And this is what happens, is all that nitrogen as well is mixing in with all the blood.
Yeah, yeah.
And what you need to do is, we do what's called deco stops, decompression stops.
You stop, exactly. I've seen that actually, if deep sea divers, they come up so far, they stop. It might take them half an hour to go down, but it might take them 5 hours to come up.
Absolutely. And this is where the technical guys, so the Gavin Tyvey and the Pat Wades, these guys, I wouldn't have the patience, because we do we were normally doing three for three, what we call three for three stops, because ours would have been fairly shallow. So we do stop for 3 minutes at 3 meters, or it could be we stop at 6 meters. So we'd have computers and everything on our hands to tell us you have to stop here at 9 meters or 6 meters or 3 meters. Mm. And even after 3 minutes, I'd be bored. I don't know how the lads do it. Because
so much, I suppose, from the technical, and I hope we haven't bored people with the technical aspect of it, but it's also very, very interesting. But getting on, I suppose, we say, okay, we've explored a little bit of the harbour here, and we've explored, we say, opposite the lifeboat house knob. Coming out long as we head out to Eastern Point, it does, the contours of the seabed change.
Well, it does. You have to kind of go out a small bit more, even, Noel, because.
Do you?
And we'll say one of the things now, I'd be, you know, for an easy way again, like the main rock kind of obviously is the bar rocks. And when we were doing about the lighthouses, I kind of explained it. If it was a field, for anybody that didn't hear that one, if you had a kind of an open field, if there was no water there, it was an open field, and somebody built a wall kind of along the middle of it, that's the bar rocks. That's what it is.
It's a line of rocks.
It's a line of rocks. Yeah. It just comes up, and it's a line of rocks that, you know, obviously it's not like the sandstone that withers away very easy. Mm. But it's just a line of rocks. And even, I remember even standing at a very, very low tide. We were able to stand on the rocks, and like last year we were fishing, myself and Stephen were out fishing, and you can see the rocks, you know, the way the bar rock,
you
know,
and if you were standing on the rocks.
Oh yeah, and this is where the problem with the ships is, you know, the way, this is why the lighthouse.
So at very low tide, what roughly
you'd be talking, we'll say, like this was astronomical tides, you know, the way, the very, very full moon.
Yes.
So this is when we were on an exercise out in the lifeboat, and we were able to just jump into the water and, you know, touched off your top of your legs, so it was still 2 meters then at that stage. You know,
so about 6 foot under. So
so it's still, you know, you wouldn't see the rocks
enough to tear the bottom of a boat, though.
Well, absolutely, because and even we'll say during storms, you can see the white horses, you know, and it's coming over the bare rocks. And that's why they have a buoy either side of it, to say, okay, from this side don't go near it, from that side, you know, just don't go in between, because, and it's brilliant. I have to say, now the bar rocks, we'll say, even for diving as well, it's nice shallow dive. You can spend a lot of time down there. You can spend about an hour, over an hour, we'll say, just on the, because they're so shallow.
Yes.
But the only thing is, oh, geez, you'd be up there, you know, if the seaweed especially is growing a bit, and this, it's going back and forth, you start getting seasick as well.
So you get seasick at all the water.
Could,
no way.
Absolutely.
Yeah, because the movement, I suppose.
When it's you, you're just back and forth. Yeah, and because it's so shallow, you're kind of following the waves then as well at that stage.
Of course, yeah.
But what I found brilliant, Noel, was for diving-wise, because there was a couple of times we were, you try to help out, you know, people who say, I lost my lobster pots or I wrapped my pots. But if you kind of go head from the bar rocks over to Cape Island, that kind of direction.
Yes.
There's a lot of kind of rock formations then as well. They were like mushrooms. And what happened was the fishermen would leave out their line, we'll say it could be lobster or shrimp pots or something like that. And it would go around it. But normally, you know, what you do is you take up one end
and then you kind of go around
with the boat, and it'll always free up because it's normally,
because I've seen him actually only the other day out here obviously out on the bar rocks there was a boat going round in circles, and that's exactly what he was doing.
Was trying to get free his things. And then what you try to do is pull up the pots, cut the rope, then go to the other side and then try to pull up the pots as much as possible as well. But it was they were like kind of mushroom type rocks, but there was always one that I always remembered, and this is going back years ago. And it was just like the ground stopped, you know, the way, like an earthquake, you know, the way you see it in earthquakes, where the ground just drops down. And it was only probably a meter, 2 meters, but it was a straight line, like a wall. But it was just where the whole ground, obviously going back maybe 10,000 years ago or something like that, whatever it was, just dropped down to a different level at the time as well. I know it didn't, I couldn't really see, because as I said, you never have fantastic visibility. You don't see the horizon underneath the water.
Of course.
You know the way. Yeah. So if you've 10 metres of visibility, you're doing brilliant.
That's quite a lot, yeah, suppose,
you're doing
yeah.
absolutely. Yeah. If normally we'd be kind of, you know, what you can see what's in this room here, but outside the room you wouldn't be able to see it. It gets, you know, it's like fog.
Of course. And of course the constant movement, then you see up things, the seabed sand and the whole lot.
Absolutely.
So you have that basically.
And, you know, and even go over to Cape Island, or on Cape Island as well now. It's like mainly rock formations, but obviously the fish life as well.
Oh yes, lobsters, marine life.
You see everything down there as well, and it's
so it's just not a proper picture of a flat sandy bottom.
Absolutely not.
Like we said, the Front Strand. Not at all.
And I suppose that's why we have such a lovely Front Strand, because obviously the way these rocks are being worn down as well by the sea, and you know, so what comes off it is the sand.
Across the sand. But is that far out, Mike, and beyond that then, when we say it's like if you went beyond Cape Bell Island out into the, we say nearly out into the shipping lanes, it's the same, but
it's not very, like, it's rocky, but it's not very, you know, they're not high rocks and things like that as well, Noel.
Yeah.
So they're all still fairly kind of close to the ground as well, because we did a lot of there was a ship called the Barrister. We never found it, and you know, it's totally wrong where they gave the coordinates, because it was supposed to be inside near Yall here, actually, between kind of Armagh and Yall and all that. And we looked everywhere for it as well. I think from Pat and Gavin Tyvey and Pat Wade, I think you can find wrecks, and you'll pick them up in magnetometers and all this, you know, so these guys would be searching, but it's very hard then to identify the wrecks, because they're direct, you know, the way people think, you know, the way you see the old galleons and pirate ships, you know, the way, and they sunk, and they're,
of course, I suppose, we're all very, very familiar, I suppose, with the film Titanic, I suppose, but no, that's down, but it's nearly 2 miles down, into different conditions completely. But we have this mental idea of, we say, wrecks that are down there, and I suppose, again, we've touched upon, we said, the contours and the geographical layout of it, but the amount of wrecks, and you touched there earlier on about the amount of debris, up in the harbour, we say, but out along there are wrecks.
There's many wrecks.
Is there?
Yeah, absolutely. But in saying that, we could be diving over a wreck and we would know it's a wreck, you know the way, because there's virtually nothing left, especially the old wooden ones, you know the way. So the Bar Rocks took an awful lot of, we'll say, wreckage between like the 1800s, 1700s.
Yes.
There's loads of descriptions of different ships that went down there. Their names are all there. They're all, you know, because it was all the Lloyds registered, the insurance were all Lloyds. So they would have had a huge, you know, list.
Record.
Yeah, the records of the whole lot of it.
And exactly. Ships, things.
But there'd be nothing left of it, Noel. Absolutely nothing.
And there'd be nothing, we say, if a ship goes down, obviously, with a cargo, like, you know, you can imagine, surely, be the goodness, if it was carrying, we say, metalwork cannons or something like that, or whatever they can, you would imagine that they'd be still down there, wouldn't you?
But if it was something like cannons, yeah, you would. But what happens then is, we're talking about the rock formations down below. It's like a red kind of sandstone rock. But anything that goes onto it, because we've seen this now, and I was going to say about the Helen Mar, there's a ship called the Helen Mar, and I'll get onto it now as well, that one probably next week even at this stage.
Yes.
But we dive that because it's a very shallow dive, and what it is the old anchor is there, but it's the exact same colour now as the rocks around
it. Should be very, very difficult to distinguish between a cannon or an anchor from a rock, because again, you know, there's so much growth down there as well.
Well, but even the everything blends in, because there's like a coating kind of, on the rocks as well. Mm. There's like a coating there as well, and everything gets coated kind of on the same thing. So it looks the same. So there was like the hull is still there, the hull of the ship, but it looks like a big rock, you know, that kind of way as well, because everything is growing. You just said it there, the weed is all on it.
Yeah.
It's very hard to kind of distinguish sometimes. And that's not an old ship, but any of the older ships like the 1800s, you know, every single time there's a storm or something like that, it's just, you know, bits of it is going to be, you know, brought, especially the wood is gone, you know the way.
Yeah.
So that would have been.
So I think you said basically, actually, so you're saying, Mike, going back to the 1800s would be practically indistinguishable now.
You wouldn't
with
even
the
see it. Absolutely not
yeah.
even
oh,
see
yeah.
it. Yeah.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
even, like, the easy way to say it too is if a ship sunk outside in the harbour, guys, the easy way to say it then is, after 10 years, all the cabins, what we call the superstructure of the ship, and that's all the cabins on top and all, you know, where the captain is and all that kind of stuff, and that's gone. That all collapses by itself.
In timber, myself, right?
No, metal.
Oh, metal?
Oh, yeah, absolutely metal.
What is that?
Oh, yeah, in 10 years it's gone. It's not gone, sorry. It just collapses down on top of each other. And then what happens is the sides tend to either fall out or fall in. So after, you know, another 20, 30, 40, 50 years, because things are rusting, you know, salt water, and it starts to rust away. So either the ship side kind of move out or move in, but they'll fall in or fall out. And then normally it's the bow and the stern are the last, Yeah, and a bit like the Titanic. It's the last bit standing because they're the strongest parts of.
So there is so much you're saying. There's a high degree of disintegration.
Oh, huge. Yeah, absolutely huge. And this is for everything, you know.
We have this mental picture of a 15th century wreck with the spars and the whole lot, like, and in the middle of it we have this open chest with fish running around gold pieces of eight.
Bit of Hollywood, yeah. You know what I mean? That's exactly what it is, because it's totally different. And like, if you think of, like, if you look out there in some of the, you know, the evenings, and there's a storm brewing as well, there's nothing. The power of the water is unbelievable, Noel, out there, you know the way. So it's
And that is, when you said that, and you mentioned now the power of the water, and we see the waves pounding the shore here. Is that energy, is that power right to the bottom?
Absolutely. Because it's shallow water, because we are all shallow. This is called the shallow water. And this is where, like, the outside, if you look at it, you know, if you're taking a ferry across to England, once you're in the Irish Sea, you know, you don't see breaking waves, white horses and all this, you know, the breaking waves. You'll see the slow undulating type, you know, big waves, but they're still kind of just, you know, the crest and the wave, as they call it. But once the water starts to come in, it's moving in. These waves are 30 metres high, or, well, you know the way, they could be, you know, but you wouldn't see it in the water, you know, out in the deep sea. You don't see it, you'll only see kind of 5 metres. But once they start to move in, then they'll start to rise up, and this is why it gets very, you know, choppy and wavy as you're coming, especially onto shore. And that's why the waves are breaking.
So we see the waves out along there now, we say they're very small waves, but underneath they're fairly big.
Absolutely. And you can tell sometimes, a lot of the times, we can see, if you look at the horizon and you kind of see a jagged line as well, it might be nice in here, but you can see outside, we can see then outside, and, you know, way outside in the horizon side of it, in the Irish Sea, that it's very, very rough. Because you can, you know, it's not a dead straight horizon line, it's like a kind of a jagged little line as well. So anybody, you know, especially during winter time, check out that as well, because you can make it out as well anyway. And you know then the storm outside, that, you know, there's rough water outside there as well.
Two things before we wrap this program up, Mike. Number one is, we've mentioned there, beyond Capel Island there, it's fairly shallow out there. Well, Ireland is sitting on the continental shelf, isn't it?
Yeah.
Right. How far out do we go when we start dropping off that?
Well, you're kind of dropping, like, so we'll say, we'll be talking kind of next week, I suppose.
Yes.
There's a ship called the Folio, which I love it. She's in about 30, like, she's 4 or 5 miles off, and 33, 34, you know, depending on the tides, then 36, 38 metres on high tide. And then as you go out farther than that, then it gets into the 70s, you know the way. So not too far. Like the Lusitania is, I think it's 100 metres. That's a good distance off as well. So it's, you're still diveable, like, especially for us, 45 metres was it.
Yeah.
You know the way, and it's enough because as I said, I just don't like doing decompression stops. But the lads, as I said, Gavin and Pat, they do 80, 90 metres as well. And more even, because they'd be diving the Lusitania and all that kind of good stuff as well. So it's still fairly shallow until you start really getting out then, Noel.
But 6 or 7 miles out to the horizon, I suppose.
More out.
Would it?
Yeah.
Would it be about more?
About 15 miles, I'd say.
Oh, would it be that?
15, 20 miles outside. Yeah. You're kind of around 75 metres, even at 15 miles out, you're kind of 75 metres. So it's still, you know, very, very diveable. And there's a lot of ships out there as well, because that's where all the torpedoes ships were as well. Most of the ships that were kind of in the closer that we dive would have been kind of either trying to head in to the shore to get away from the likes of the submarines or the storms. Even they were, you know, they were coming ashore, but they got the wrong places. You know, they thought it was one place and they were coming in, and it was somewhere totally different. That happened an awful lot. Like, especially we spoke about the lighthouses. That's one of the big reasons.
Yes.
Ballycotton, Helvick, and Yall, you know, were kind of to stop these type of accidents happening as well, and they happened a lot. So that's it anyway at the moment.
Finally, Mike, I suppose, just again before we leave it, we've had an in-depth look, pardon the pun, I suppose, of the contours of the seabed and as far as Capel Island there. We've seen out in the front strand there during the winter times the remains of the yew wood.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. The forest.
The forest.
That's right, like, yeah.
A few people realised that that forest actually went practically all the way out to Cape and Island.
Well, I'm not sure how far it went out, but, you know, we went back to the time, we'll say, like, if you think of it, the Ice Age, when the Ice Age starts, you know, it starts to freeze kind of in the north.
Yes.
And there's massive, like, the ice could be like a mile thick, mm-hmm. and as it's coming down. So what happens is it kind of sucks the water out of, you know, the way. So it takes a lot.
It does, yeah, yeah.
It takes a lot of water. So what happens is there's a lot of, and we spoke about it, like, mm-hmm. I know they said 800, you know, we were talking about this big storm that happened and changed the course of the black water and all
yes,
that.
Yes.
They said about 800, but I reckon it's way before that as well. Like myself anyway, I'd say it was before that. But I was even thinking that's where, you know, pre the time when the black water was flown out through, we'll say, Whiting Bay,
you know,
and we mentioned Ardmore being an island, and that it went probably out through Ardmore, out to the Curragh, through the Curragh and Whiting Bay at the same time, and then little Ardmore was an island. And we spoke about that, and maybe back then, like, the forest is there. But I remember even there was, like, it's probably 10,000 years, that forest that's there is probably 10,000 years, but there was a small bit there one day because my father was a forester.
And he'd have an idea, yeah.
And he had an idea about, especially
about the age of timber, yeah.
And there was one bit, and I just pulled it out, a small bit of hope, I'm not insulting any historians here, and I brought it into him, and because there was a bark on it, and I said, you know, Dad, what do you think of that is? And he says, oh, it's birch. You know, and he was able to say it straight away.
Go away.
At 10,000, and I said, that's 10,000 years old. And he went, get out of it. You know the way? There was way. And so that was the forest that's outside. I would know if it goes out. You'd only see it in the kind of the, in the sandy.
You know, when the sand is basically torn up in winter
you
time.
You won't see it out farther.
You won't see it out farther.
Not at all, not at all. You won't see it at all. But yeah, it's interesting. It's lovely to see it as well anyway. So it is fantastic that it's there. It's ancient. It's 10,000 years plus. Do you know the way that things... And that's what, like, Clay Castle. Clay Castle is the leftover of an ice age, because when the ice age was retreating, as it's kind of pushing down, the ice is always moving, glaciers move, and what it does, it builds up underneath, it builds up all loads of stone and all that kind of good stuff as well, and there'd be a big pile of it, and then when it starts to melt, it just deposits
Believe
it,
you know,
way. That's it, and that's so where Clay Castle came from.
Remnants of the Ice Age.
Ice Age, and that's what it is, so it's as good.
Fascinating, Mike. Mike, again, as I often quote, as I said, Mike Brooks, our resident historian, will be back with us again next week. And as I always say, they're like, you know, one small head could carry all it new. God bless him. He'll be back with us again next week.
Thanks,
fascinating look into the contours of the River Blackwater. Next week, folks, we'll be talking about what's down there as regards wrecks and different wrecks and things.
We're breaking this one into because, you know, we said we were going to do it for a while, but we're going to break it into a few different sessions anyway, definitely. And we're just going to go kind of some of the like just more probably interesting wrecks as well, and kind of from our more to the Knockadoon our wrecks as well anyway. So we'll get another show out of it.
We'll get another show. So as the sailor says, so much to do and so much to see. Mike Bruce, again, once again, thank you very much for coming in, and indeed we're looking forward to next week.
Thanks, Owen. Good morning to everybody.